VentureCast.
Things for us to discuss on our next podcast, because we got to get Ben to bed, and we don't have time to talk about my trip to LA. I met with Peter and Mark of ElectroCast.
Woohoo!
They've got big plans for us, so I got to break that down with you at some point.
I assume part of the big plans is replacing the talent with better talent, which is why you want to talk offline.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
They did mention that one of us is going to have to go.
Yeah,
we'll talk about which one later.
50 years of music with 50-year-old white guys.
It was not a trick question. Welcome to 50 years of music with 50-year-old white guys on the ElectroCast podcast network. Guys, we're getting the band back together. We're all together again.
We're kind of all together. Yeah. Ben is somehow making this happen from very, very, very far away.
Yeah, we don't have Ben's visual, but Ben, use your voice.
Yeah, right here in beautiful Tuscany, Italy.
Wow.
And it's 9:30 at night, and I'm sitting in an olive grove next to a pool, and I just had a lovely dinner with my two daughters and my oldest daughter's best friend, Maya. So things are working out for me, for sure.
Wow. And how's the weather in Tuscany?
It's a little warm today walking around Florence. I'm not going to complain, but I'm just going to say it was a little warm.
Yep.
But no, it's beautiful by the pool, believe me. It's lovely at night.
Those old cities really kind of capture the smell on hot days.
Yeah, no, for sure. And Dahlia really wanted to go to the Boboli Gardens, which are lovely.
Okay.
But there's a 250-meter rise from when you enter to when you end. It's just basically a straight walk uphill to a rose garden. And I was just drenched in sweat and miserable by the time we got to the roses.
Good workout.
I will say, though, Ben, you are living your best life. Like, if people are listening to this podcast, they're like, Ben's life's where it's at. And then Tim lives in his basement and Jeff just keeps working.
So. The difference between the college teaching track and the high school teaching track, perhaps. Well, Jeff, though, you've got a busy social life. You went to Pearl Jam since
I went to Pearl Jam on May 13th. I did. Yeah.
How were they?
They were okay. You know, Cameron's sick, so they had drummers filling in. And the first night they had the drummers fill in. It was all very magical and they pulled it off. And the second night, all of the kind of like clams and screwed up bridges and endings you would expect from having guys filling in on drums happened. And like the band was visibly like shaken and bummed out. So it was a very weird show, but it was great to be there. I haven't seen them in a long time.
Wow.
And they're very, you know, they're great. Eddie Vedder is becoming Bruce Springsteen, by the way. He's looking like him. He's got like that kind of overworked out upper body. He's got the sleeves rolled up and he's got all the between patter, like, oh, shucks, I'm going to tell a little story like Springsteen does. That's all totally planned out in advance. And I'm not complaining at all, but it's really funny to see them kind of morph into one another.
That's awesome.
It really is. It's a great career. If that career ends up with you rolling up your sleeves on your biceps. I do not do that in American studies class.
Not yet.
Try it.
Not yet. Maybe I haven't hit
next year.
Dude, you should really start to pull a Springsteen, like open up classes like, yeah, so 17 years ago, I was sitting outside of a bar in Temecula.
My dad was saying, you don't get a haircut. All right.
I also have to tell America that the exciting life of my son continues. I don't know if dedicated listeners will remember my son was hit by a car.
Yes.
Right before Thanksgiving.
Oh, God.
This Monday night, he came out to the back where I'm recording this to do some homework and interrupted a B&E in process.
At your home?
Yes. A guy shoving all kinds of stuff from the garage into a garbage bag.
And in your garage? What?
Yes. Yes. And so we'll open the door. This is my favorite part. We'll open the door, saw an intruder shoving some of his belongings into a garbage bag and said, hey, man, you got to get out of here.
That's pretty good.
That's good advice.
To which this gentleman said, "Oh, excuse me, sir, I'm in the wrong place," and then took off with the garbage bag full of stuff, but he dropped it running over our fence. So we lost nothing, and he left behind his cell phone and meth pipe. So we actually came out a little ahead.
Did the cops catch him or no?
No, but the cops came and, you know, took photographs and dusted for fingerprints and all that kind of good stuff. So
I don't
think the cell phone would be a good clue. I mean, they had, like, in terms of the Inspector Clouseau, like, you can pretty much hand the cell phone and be like, there's a lot of information here.
The sad part was the meth pipe was left on top of a game of chutes and ladders. So, like, it's like meth residue in the middle of a not quite completed game of chutes and ladders that Will and B were playing. So
that's a long shoot right there.
Desperation to it. So
yeah,
never a dull moment out here.
No, that's amazing. California. I'm glad it turned out the way it did.
Yeah, me too.
Yeah.
When I was a kid, a latchkey kid in the 70s, not to be mean to my parents, and I know my dad listens, but I was a latchkey kid. And I came home and we moved to a different house in third grade. So this is pre-third grade. I came home, I went to put my key in the lock, and the door had been busted open in Brooklyn.
Oh, no.
Like, kicked in, splinters everywhere. And I was like, that's weird. So I just walked in.
Oh no.
And like, everything was in disarray. And like, they took my dad's stereo and all my mom's jewelry was taken. And so I walked in and I was like, oh, the fridge is still here. They would steal the refrigerator. That's the most valuable thing we have. So I fixed myself a snack. And then I called my mom and I was like, I think someone might have been here.
Oh my God, that's amazing.
That's some detective
luckily, mom,
skills
the
there.
Bologna is still here.
Yeah. Wow.
Yeah,
all
no.
Right.
The guy ran past Will and went over the fence, and then it hit Will. Like, Will had been totally cool through the whole thing, and then all of a sudden he was like, dude in backyard! Dude in backyard!
He started screaming.
Yeah.
So you were home at the time.
I was in the kitchen 10 feet away.
Oh yeah. Wow.
So that was, yeah. Anyway.
All right, good. Good. I'm glad everything turned out all right. You know, that punk reminds me of Daft Punk.
Oh my God, that's a terrible segue. That's just the worst segue.
Let's go to the Grammy winning album.
It's the Grammy winner.
Random Access Memories by Daft Punk.
Of what year? 2013. Here we go.
Legend of the Phoenix, all ends with beginnings. What keeps the planet spinning? The force from the beginning.
Daft Punk? I like that song. That's a good song.
I love when Tim does like meticulous research for the show.
I thought Daft Punk were the guys in the masks or something.
They are.
This is just completely classic Grammys. They choose the least interesting, most 70s sounding album and song by these guys, and that's what they choose to celebrate. I actually am a Daft Punk fan, and I can't poop on that song. That's a great song. That is a fantastic 70s disco song. It sounds really, really good. In their full catalog of work, that's the least interesting thing. If you want to hear a great Daft Punk song, 2.5 minutes just freaking shreds.
Here it comes.
Oh, yeah?
He's right. It's a good one. Coming up right now.
So yeah, so that's what their catalog actually sounds like.
They're I like the first one better.
Super, they're super aggro, techno. I don't the Oh Yeah thing, like you can really dance to that. Like that song is great. I love that one.
I love Get Lucky though. I mean, it's great, but it's also just, I mean, it's just a Chic song. Like, I mean, it's I Stole Your Love from Chic, but I mean, I loved it. I actually like the way Wilco did it at their cover show. It's like a little rock funk version of it. It was pretty great.
All right. That is the Grammy winner for 2013. We have some, how shall I say this? Some unpacking to do of the 2012 podcast.
Oh, I was hoping we would do some.
Jeff, I know you don't listen to our podcast, but I was wondering what the experience was like for you recording the 2012 podcast.
It was a little weird. Not having y'all to bounce off to it. I felt like I was on a long drive talking to myself. I don't know how you guys felt, but that's kind of how I felt. Like I'm in hour six of a drive and I'm by myself and I'm so sick of the radio that I just start like pretending I have.
Wait a minute. We have unearthed something we did not know. Ben, did you know Jeff talks to himself on long drives?
Oh yeah. You don't?
No.
What are you kidding me?
What's happening right now? You're driving along and you have a conversation.
Absolutely.
And Ben, this rings true?
Oh, yeah. Dude, I have a running conversation with myself in my head at long periods of time. And sometimes it leaks out into my outside voice. And I'm
That's
like,
right.
Oh, did I say that outside? That was weird.
Yep. Especially an hour, like if I'm driving through Omaha, you know, I'm like, it just starts to, you know, manifest itself.
Okay.
Into the air.
All right. Well, let's.
I did listen though. I listened to both of your segments. It's the first one I've listened to. I skipped my own segment, but listened to both of yours, so I am familiar with the entire podcast. And I'm disappointed, Timmy. Did you stick a never heard of him in the middle of mine after Tallest Man on Earth, or did you not put that in?
I did not, never listened to him.
Oh, okay. So that
I'd heard of him. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right.
But one thing I'll note is that the like sports radio or political radio, like one of the craziest things about Rush Limbaugh is he did a 3 to 4 hour show.
Yeah.
And only took calls for like an hour of it. It's insane.
Yeah.
Like he would physically sit down 12 minutes at a time and just talk with no interruption. Like it's just unbelievable.
Stephen,
it really
Smith
is crazy.
Cause that,
I was at about minute 8. I was like, oh, I'm almost sick of myself. I can't imagine how this is going to play out.
No.
Ben, I love the fact that you were terrible on Who Died, even when you weren't up against Jeff. You were just...
I did that on purpose, and I had India work with me. I thought you would enjoy that, Tim, for sure.
And then Mumford and Sons. So
I'm right that you like them, correct?
It's so funny. I looked up some ping pong rules yesterday. I had an argument with my son, so I went and I looked up some rules, and then for the next 48 hours on Facebook or on Instagram of getting advertisements for ping pong tables. You know, it's just like they've been watching me, they know me, they think this is what I need. Same thing with Mumford and the Sons. You know, it's I should love them. And I don't.
Yeah.
I don't.
No, you don't.
No. You know why? Because in their
because they suck. Was that it? Was that what got you?
Their very first album. Or the very first single that came across where they kept dropping the F-bomb. I was like, that was unnecessary.
Oh, my God, Tim. You just cracked me up.
It was too gangster rap. That was the problem for the source. They're too hard.
You know, they're wearing, like, the tweed and the vest and then dropping F-bombs. No,
oh, my God. Sorry. I love that you still judge art by whether it would make you uncomfortable in front of your mom. That is really, like, that's the first thing. That, all these years, like... That really is the like, oh, I could not sit on the couch next to mom while that happened. Out! It's out!
I'm out. I don't like them. So I wanted to make sure that was clear.
Okay, fair enough.
And you guys have a strong dislike for them.
Oh, yeah, just like they
drive you crazy.
Well, they put up my full of shit meter. Like they send that going like from the jump.
So. All right. But Jeff, you're with me, right? Like there's a version of this where that entire like genre is bet. Like the Lumineers could be great too. Like I don't understand why it is that there's these bands that play instruments and write their own songs and sing in harmonies and basically work out of a alt country songbook that I despise.
Like, I know, it's actually, so weird.
Like I'm actually upset about it. I'm like, I don't understand why you guys like, you know, just go back and cover No Depression. You know, like it's not hard. Like I'm not asking a lot from you. Just go back to that.
Yeah, I don't know what it is. It's like there's just enough twee or like attempt to cross over to a giant audience, which just makes it all feel like a gigantic pose to me.
Wow.
Yeah, fair.
All right. Well, part of our job at this podcast is also to remind people of where we have been as a society. And in 2013, Pope Benedict voluntarily resigns as Pope of the Catholic Church. How far back do we have to go to find the last Pope who resigns from his position voluntarily, not forced out due to a schism, voluntarily? How far back?
Is this a trick question? Is it never?
It is, the answer is not never.
Okay.
I'm going to say 450 years.
450 years. Good guess.
First of all, don't let Jeff guess again. He said never. I'm never. Winning this.
Oh, now. Okay.
I finally get to win one.
You got this one.
I should have said never minus one.
It is Pope Celestine in 1294. Pope Celestine voluntarily resigned from.
He was lazy. He was notoriously. Wasn't he Pope Celestine the Lazy? Wasn't that his nickname?
I think so. He was like, wait, I got to get up again? No.
This fucking hat, he would say to himself.
He didn't. Oh, my gosh. My mother's meter just went through the roof with that.
Sorry. But Tim just visibly blushed, for those of you listening at home.
All right. In 2013. Oh, my God, Ben, that was the other hilarious thing about your bit on 2012 when you went to a disaster. And India didn't know how to react. She's like, that's terrible. Why are you telling me that?
Yeah, that's great.
Funny stuff. But sadly, in 2013, we did have the Boston Marathon bombing and everything that shook out from that, which I followed way too closely. I was on the news 24 hours a day with that. Invitation to Cynicism, Ben, this should be right up your alley. United States v. Windsor. What did that case decide?
Not ringing a bell. I'm in Tuscany, man. You're going to have to help me.
Gay marriage is legalized at the federal level.
It's not Obergefell?
Yeah, I thought it was Obergefell.
What's Windsor?
I don't know. Now, U.S. versus Windsor is typically the name of a criminal case, so I don't know what that would be.
Now I got to do real research. This is terrible. All right, you don't worry about it there in Tuscany. You just enjoy your grapes. We'll figure
that could
this
be
out
an next. Alternate name for it, but it's Obergefell versus somebody is the name of the gay marriage case.
So, is it in jeopardy based on what you've read of the leaked Roe v. Wade decision?
Yes. The logic of the leaked Roe versus Wade decision is a very hard, I was going to say extreme, but a fair way to say it would be a hardcore version of originalism, which is you ask yourself, when the 14th Amendment was passed, did the people who passed it at that time think it would have this effect? So obviously the people who passed the 14th Amendment didn't think it would make abortion legal everywhere in the US. That would have been really strange for them to think. Abortion wasn't even really a medical procedure then. And gay marriage obviously would be the same, but gay marriage would likely be the same thing. They certainly weren't thinking about gay people and whether they could marry when they passed the 14th Amendment. So if you take that logic of what the Constitution means, then the Constitution would not apply to a lot of different things.
In your opinion, is it absurd to take that tact?
No, I think absurd is a tough way to put it. No, I don't think it's absurd to take that tact on it. And also the folks who were voting in this have been really crystal clear on it. And they were appointed by presidents who were also crystal clear on it.
Yeah.
And we live in a democracy. So there is an aspect in that.
Sure.
That being said, I mean, what they're going to do, I think what they may do is not actually get rid of gay marriage, because people like gay marriage, but people still hate abortion. So that may in fact be where they end up, which is not a very principled stand on it, but that may be more palatable. I don't know the answer to that.
So a strict constructionist, then, if I am going 65 miles an hour in a 55 mile an hour zone, but my wife is pregnant and is having the baby, they would still give me the speeding ticket.
Yeah, no, but this is originalism, which is different than strict construction. It's not that they're reading the Constitution strictly. It's that they're saying that the Constitution can only mean what it meant when the people who passed either the amendment or the Constitution passed it. That's what they mean by originalism. And one of the things that's hard about it is that we haven't really read the Constitution that way. And so
right.
It's a fundamental shift in what we're doing. And so you're like, but I mean, if we had been reading the Constitution that way from the very beginning, then you'd be like, oh, well, if you want gay marriage, then you should amend the Constitution, rather than just having the Supreme Court change their mind on it. But we haven't done that. And so that the shift in the, like shifting in midstream this way is going to grind some gears for sure.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, I mean, amazing. We are all smarter for these poolside chats of yours. This is really lovely.
What does the Italian Constitution have to say about originalism?
Oh, dude. So listen, don't get me started. Italy's a civil law country, and so they barely have a constitution.
Right.
So yeah, all of the constitutions in Europe are new, basically. Like they all came in the 20th century. So they're funky, wow. They're longer. Some people like them better, but yeah.
All right. Well, let's take a quick ad break. And now we're back, and let's get back to the music. We're going to go with the number one selling album. Jeff Simons, pick your poison on this one.
It's the number one album.
The 2020 Experience by Justin Timberlake.
I be on my suit and tie shit, tie shit, tie. I be on my suit and tie shit, tie shit. Can I show you a new thing? Because I be on my suit and tie shit, tie shit.
Check it.
I be on my suit and tie shit, tie shit. Let me show you a few things. Let me show you a few things.
Wait a minute. You ready, JT?
I can't wait till I get you on the floor good looking. Hey, going hot so hot, just like an oven. And I'll burn myself, I just had to touch it. But it's so fine, and it's all mine.
Haven't heard this one. Jeff, is this your cup of tea?
I'm not a Justin Timberlake hater, but this record, I'll defer to Ben, because if Ben says he loves this record, I have a question for him. So I'll start.
Remind
there.
Me which Timberlake record this is. I
this
did recognize
this. This is the 2020 Experience.
Oh, yeah. This isn't my favorite.
And why is that?
So there's the Timberlake. All of the Timberlake material, in my opinion, is very derivative and mines from the past.
Yes.
And then he drifts in and out of what past he comes from. This one's like the 70s mixed with crooner 50s.
Yep.
And that one I just don't like as much. When he's just working, when he's like, I'm trying to be Michael Jackson, I'm like, okay, fine.
There
I
we go.
Things about Michael Jackson.
Perfect. Perfect analysis. The other problem with this record is the average song length is 7.5 minutes.
What? Oh, good Lord. I forgot 802, that. 802,
526, 710, 759, 946, 717, 711, 804. I mean, these songs are endless. This is one of those records that's an hour and 18 minutes long when it could be 45 minutes long.
Man. JT, bummer. Give us a break.
Tighten it up.
He is amazing on Saturday Night Live, though. He's so funny on Saturday Night Live.
That's the other thing, too. It's like, I forgive this guy all kinds of things because he is a genuine triple threat entertainer. He's a pretty funny actor. He's wonderfully comedic. He's willing to look stupid. He can sing. He can dance. Like, what are you going to do? Like, that boy's got talent, to quote Eddie Murphy.
Yeah, I have... I have Bringing Sexy Back and Dick in a Box as a tie, and it's his best songs.
Yes. Yes.
Pretty good. It's pretty good. All right. Things for us to discuss on our next podcast, because we got to get Ben to bed. And we don't have time to talk about my trip to LA. I met with Peter and Mark of Electrocast.
Woohoo!
They've got big plans for us, so I got to break that down with you at some point.
I assume part of the big plans is replacing the talent with better talent, which is why you want to talk offline.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
They did mention that one of us is going to have to go.
Yeah, but,
we'll talk about which one later. Nina's impressions of us on Twitter, we got to break that down at some point because that hit a little too close to home.
Oh, that was fantastic.
Man, her impression of me was not an impression at all. It was a direct quote.
Yeah, that it was. Exactly, that was just the transcript.
Oh, dude, I've been contemplating the black hole at the center of it all, like, since I read Nina's tweet. I'm like, oh, that is what I'm looking at.
And then I really, really, really want to take a trip this July and meet you guys in Tulsa, Oklahoma, at the Bob Dylan Center, and they'll get us like a little space set up, and we'll do a live podcast from the Bob Dylan Museum there in Tulsa.
I mean, sure, but in what universe can you just decide that we can make that trip? Aren't you scheduled out to the millisecond for the rest of your life like I am? I was looking at my schedule. I'm like, I have 3 hours to do nothing, like July 8th. And other than that, I'm just like,
nailed it. I'm just putting it out in the universe, and I'm going to let the universe take over.
Okay. I'm down with that. Let's do that. I would much like to visit the museum.
But let's go in basketball season, and then we can go up to Oklahoma City and see a game. That's how we do it.
Oh,
even better. Cool. Let's see if the NCAA tournament regionals are in Oklahoma City next time. We'll go for like a Thursday,
that's
Saturday.
That's a great call.
Wow. All right. Let's get to our three albums.
Our three albums.
Ben, you go first for us.
Oh, I'm going to be nice and brisk. J. Cole is born 1985 in West Germany, the son of an African-American father who's in the U.S. Army, and a white woman. I'm pretty sure that she's German. I think she becomes an American citizen by marrying or getting involved with the father. Father abandons the family, I'm sad to report. They moved to Fayetteville, North Carolina, and that's where J. Cole grows up, with a white mom, and it's expressing himself as an African-American, and he's definitely looks African-American in Fayetteville, North Carolina. He goes to St. John's College in New York because he wants to get into the music business. And he's also trying to make it as a basketball player. He like tried out every year to get on as a walk-on in the St. John's basketball team.
I feel you.
And he super similar story. He's doing mixtapes. He's got several different mixtapes. Eventually draw the attention of Jay-Z. Puts out, I think he's now got 5 different records. Each one hit number one. This record is called Born Sinner. It's his second record. And it's a crease record for him. His first record and this record are really, really, really poppy. And his rapping was kind of mocked, and he was treated along with Drake. He was treated kind of as a sing-song, happy rap act, and he took a lot of crap for it. And then the record after this is named after his address in Fayetteville, North Carolina, and he goes in a darker direction. And then his more recent records have been really kind of sort of more hardcore rap acts. He's weirdly a contemporary with Kendrick Lamar. He actually produced a couple of early Kendrick tracks and they worked together on several different things. And it kind of, in my opinion, derailed him later in his career because he sounds so much more like Kendrick and he's trying to be a real serious hardcore rapper. My favorite version of J. Cole is the first and the second albums, the goofy, super fun, sing-songy Drake type records. And he's got a little social consciousness mixed into it. I'm going to go with Crooked Smile. And there's a version of this where I tell Jeff where to start, but I'm in Tuscany. So Jeff, start at 000, Crooked Smile. You're the best.
Thank you.
Born Center by J. Cole.
They tell me I should fix my grill cause I got money now. I ain't gon' sit around in front like I ain't thought about it. A perfect smile is more appealing, but it's funny how my shit is crooked, look at how far I done got without it. I keep my twisted grill just to show the kids it's real. We ain't picture perfect, but we worth the picture still. I got smart, I got rich, and I got bitches still. And they all look like my eyebrows, thick as hell. Love yourself, girl, or nobody will. Though you a woman, I don't know how you deal with all the pressure to look impressive and go out in heels. I feel for you, killing yourself to find a man that'll kill for you. You wake up, put makeup on, stare in the mirror, but it's clear that you can't face what's wrong. No need to fix what God already put his paintbrush on. Your roommate yelling, why you gotta take so long? What it's like to have a crooked smile.
So I love that one.
Yeah.
And so TLC sings, that's beautiful. It's about him not fixing his teeth. That's the actual song.
Is about. I love
the first
that.
Half of the first lyrics are he's got a twisted grill, which means his teeth are messed up, but he never got braces and he keeps them to show the kids that it's okay. And then the second half of the first verse and the whole second verse is all about the pressure put on women and how they have to make themselves look good. And obviously in hip hop, that's a super likable one. The third one is about how how African-Americans have been mistreated by the police. And that's the Crooked Smile Nation, basically. And the whole record's like that. Like, it's just super upbeat and up-tempo and fun. I love this record. It breaks my heart a little bit that he got so much pushback that he felt like he had to be like a more serious rapper. That being said, You Can't Go Wrong and Can't Get Enough is the single off of the first record. You can't go wrong with that one either.
You know, I'm listening to you, Ben, and like I'm sitting here thinking about like in other artistic milieus, you can take a flyer towards something. And if it doesn't work out, you can just go right back. You know, like a dramatic actor can try comedy, and if they suck at it, they're like, oh, back to the Shakespeare, and vice versa, right? Like a comedian can try to do something serious, and if it just doesn't land, they can just go back and do Anchorman 2. But it's really hard, especially for hip hop guys. Like, if you have a lane and you step out of it, it can really derail. It's really hard to step back, right? And it can really derail the audience's relationship with you in ways that are semi-permanent, you know?
Oh, yeah, no, for sure. Although all of us can think of examples of comedians who became serious actors and then never went back to comedy.
Yeah.
And there is a thing that happened. Like, basically, I think he moved out of his lane on purpose. And I'm sure, I mean, I'm not, like, all of his records have debuted at number one on top charts. So I think it's worked out fine for him. I just miss the old version of him. I mean, it's similar to Kanye. Like, I miss the old Kanye. You know what I mean?
You mean you missed the old Kanye?
I was gonna say
totally, dude. I was Kanye exactly right. Quoting that song, "The Cut Up the Soul," Kanye.
Yeah. I like that. Yeah. What's J. Cole doing now? What's he releasing these days?
Last year, I forgot the name of the record, but I mean, he puts out a record every 2 years.
Okay.
And the new records are much more drum tracky with him sort of angrily rapping over it, whereas the old record sounded like this. Yeah.
I would say J. Cole's one of the perennial, every kid in my school listens to it the second it comes out. Like J. Cole, Tyler, the Creator, Chance, the rapper,
Kendrick Lamar.
Like they're right now for my students, they're all Pantheon must listen to artists.
Yep. Ditto in North Carolina, Jeff.
Near Fayetteville or not near Fayetteville? How far away is Fayetteville?
Near Fayetteville. Not physically nor mentally.
Okay, good.
All right, what do you got?
We're going to starting overseas as well, in the United Kingdom, but not England, and not Scotland, and not Ireland. So Tim, you get your Welsh shout out this week.
My Welsh shout.
You've been saying we need to. Don't we have listeners in Wales?
We do have a few listeners in Wales.
So Wales listeners, this bud's for you. Ritzy Brian is a guitar player and singer, and she's very good at a very young age, and she falls in love with a high school classmate, and they decide to make a band and conquer the world. And the relationship breaks up, but the band they put together is doing pretty well. So they figure out a way to get along, and they get a drummer, and they become a very unusual power trio, where she is the singer and the songwriter and the lead guitarist. And then the two dudes are the rhythm section behind her. And Ritzy's a good guitar player, but she's not in the style of kind of a bluesy, tons of soloists. She likes sounds and she likes to layer things together. And the original name of the band kind of peters out, but they make a demo, and it's Wales, right? So it's easy to give it to everybody who can get you a record deal. And they find somebody and they get an international deal, and they become a band called The Joy Formidable.
Huh.
First release is an EP, and it's good. But it's very swirly. Like I would say the first EP and the first Joy Formidable records jumped out at me for the quality of the sound and her voice, which I like quite a bit. But I don't love them. I like them. I admire them. But I didn't feel like the songwriting was quite there yet. Like there's a lot of songs that exist for the purpose of the cool sounds that she's able to conjure out of her pedal board. And the kind of swirlingness. But the second record, which is my pick for favorite Joy Formidable record and my pick for 2013, is called Wolf's Law. And Ritzy, for the first time, doesn't write with the band in mind. She writes with her vocal in mind. It's the first time she sits down at a piano and uses a guitar without all the effects and tries to construct songs first, where the melodies are clear to her. And then she brings it to the band and they take these kind of skeleton melody and chord changes and push them through the Joy Formidable envelope. And I think you can really hear the difference. Like this is the record for me that threads the needle between their experimentation and her songwriting. Very tellingly, on the 12-inch single of the first single for this, the flip side is a cover of Bruce Springsteen's Badlands. Like,
all right,
this is the record where she gets really interested in song construction. And I don't think she's made a bad record. I like every Joy Formidable record. I wish each one was a little bit shorter and a little bit stronger. Like even this record, as much as I love it, is two or three songs too long at 12 songs. There's a couple of big, long, 6-minute soundscapey songs that ask a lot of you. I prefer the 3.5-minute Cloud of Dust version of this band. They are great live. I've never gotten to see them in person, but I've seen them on the interwebs performing at festivals. Ritzy Brian is super underrated. Like she's a powerhouse, and it's amazing how much noise she controls from the stage between her guitar and her voice, fronting the band, filling all the space that's absent when it's just a trio of musicians and the other two are bass and drums. So I'm going to play Chala, which is track 2. It was one of the singles. It's my favorite song on the record. And it's also just like super indicative of this band. So if you like this one, there's four or five records to start to check out. And, you know, you just go to Spotify and listen to the top five and get a really good sense of this band. But I really like these guys, and I'm thrilled to shine some light on the Joy Formidable. Here we go.
Wolf's Law by the Joy Formidable.
And everybody's really good in the band, and they're great at stacking. Like verse two, it'll change the drum pattern. There's always a bridge. They're clever arrangers, and it's just it's thoughtful without losing the kind of looseness that makes music like that fun to listen to. So I'm a fan.
Really loved it.
I quite like that band. I had no idea that they were a trio. That is freaking amazing.
Isn't that crazy?
She kicks up so much noise. Like, that's really, really impressive. My favorite is actually the first album, the 2011 one, that's got the magnifying glass on it. That's my favorite
that's
Joy Formidable song. But yeah, I really, really like them. I'm just thrilled to hear that it's a female singer-songwriter with the guitar parts, because those guitar parts just absolutely shreds.
Yeah.
She's got a big-time, beautiful voice. The first album sounds very much in that vein, too. Like the rock with the layers and the loud, the soft, really super likable.
Yeah, the Big Roar is the first record. That's also a great place to start. And I like Arth from 2018, which is probably not pronounced that way, but it's A-A-A-R-T-H, which I just love all the Welsh stuff. And but that record jumped out after a couple that I didn't love as much. So they put out a record in 2021, and I'm hopeful.
I quite
that,
like that one too. I got several songs on that on my mix. Yeah.
Yeah, man. I'm hopeful that they'll come back to America and tour, and I'll finally get to see them in person, because it sure looks like a hell of a good time.
I'd be super curious to see if she can do all that stuff live. I mean, it's a lot of guitar work to do.
When I saw her at Coachella on the, you know, watching it, the live stream, she's just like working a pedal board and like layering stuff and constantly. And then she'll kick back and jam with the band for 45 seconds and then hit a whole bunch of switches on the floor and bring it all back to nothing and start singing. Like it was very impressive knowing how hard it is to do that.
Yeah.
And not lose the groove. I was really knocked out.
No, to carry a trio like that, that's really something. That's great.
So, powerful young woman from Alabama last week, powerful young woman from Wales this week. I'm going with a powerful young woman from New Zealand. I'm going with Lord Pure Heroin. although there's also there's another band. What's their name? Churches, you guys know Churches from Edinburgh.
Mm-hmm.
More pop, more synthesizer, but I almost picked them this week. I think they're pretty cool. But how can I not pick Lord? Her real name is too long for me to for me to read out, but I want you to play Jeff Simons for me the first maybe 15 seconds of the first song on Pure Heroin.
Don't you think that it's boring how people talk?
Stop. She's got me. You got
that
me.
That was 8 seconds.
You sorry. Told me to play. Yeah, but that's all I need. Don't you think it's boring how people... Yes, I do. Yes, I do. I've actually thought that for a long time. Binks Bowling in The Moviegoer, he thinks the same thing. This child totally resonated with me from the get-go. Do you have the link that I sent you?
I do. You want me to play that?
Not if you don't want to.
No. Here, okay, I'll play it. I have something to say about it afterwards, but yes, let me get it here. Ready?
Go ahead.
I've been roving around, always looking down at all I see.
Okay, stop. Go ahead. What do you want to say?
Well, this is her at age 12 covering yeah. Kings of Leon, right?
Yeah. Age 12. What do you want to say? What do you want to say?
I am not in the cult of listen how precocious this young kid is. I am just like, I am so done with let's find an 8-year-old who can sound like a grown-up and elevate them to high art status before they've even had a chance to put braces on. Like, we chewed up and spat out so much budding talent in the 90s and 2000s because social media let us invade their personal space. And I'm just determined not to push that prodigy narrative. Like, I just think it does more harm than good. It ruins athletes' careers before they get a chance to develop. And I think it is super duper deep pooper dangerous. Like, I mean,
so
I work
with
occasionally really super talented high school students and they're like, hey, I think I'm going to make an album. And I'm like, you should make demos and you should wait. Like, don't put out art at 15 and make that the moment when people judge whether or not you have talent or not. Like, live a little bit, have some heartbreak, move, like, feed yourself for 6 months. You're right. Lord's amazing at age 12, but I'm much more interested in what Lord does at age 30 than I am at what she was able to do at age 12. So, not to be a killjoy, but I'm just so worried. I just worry so much about that American Idol, America's Got Talent. Let's put a 6-year-old in tap shoes and give them their 15 minutes. And then they'll spend the rest of their lives like wondering why nobody gives a shit about them anymore. So,
well, but dude, also remember that was on regular TV where there was a filter for it. I mean, with TikTok and with YouTube now, everyone's trying to do that and trying to break through. I mean, you don't even like you count the Lords who actually do break through, but you don't count all the people who don't break through.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, it's just brutal.
Yeah. 14-year-old plays 30 seconds into like, hey, look, I'm learning how to play the guitar, and people write, kill yourself. Like, I just think that's just us at our worst, I'm afraid.
That being said, Lord is great.
Yeah.
This record is great.
I love it.
The EP, The Love Club, which is her very first one. The song, The Love Club, if you haven't heard that, you're going to freaking love it. Everyone knows the song Royals off of this record. This record blew me away. The girls absolutely love it. The only thing they loved more than this record is the next record. And then we'll find out about this maybe in the future, but Georgia's absolute favorite is the Solar Power one. She just absolutely loves the most recent one. I can't remember... did I tell the Lord at Bonnaroo story?
No. Yes. You did?
Good. I already told it. Anyhow, she was fantastic at Bonnaroo, and she was so vulnerable and beautiful to us in the crowd. I absolutely love her. She's one of my favorite artists in that generation. And this record, Tim has got it completely right. Leave aside whatever she did when she was 12. This record hits like a bomb. And it's super similar to the Adele record. It sounds like nothing else. Like nothing else. When Royals came on the radio, I was like, what in the actual fuck is this? Where did this come from?
Yeah.
Totally agree. It's a great pick, Tim. I'm not casting aspersions on the pick at all. It's great.
I haven't even gotten to play my song yet.
All right.
You just dropped a bomb. My point is in that you can hear her self-possession already and her assuredness. And it's so cool that at 12, she's ready to offer her version of Kings of Leon.
Yeah, it's really remarkable. Like, she is truly an artist at 12 in ways that are once in a generation. Like, Mozart was also at 12 a real artist. Not to compare Lord to Mozart, but that same like that same sense of like, I understand the aesthetic of my vision. That usually doesn't happen yet.
Super. So you know, my daughter is playing the piano, playing guitar, and all she was just like, oh my gosh, if I could just get on America's Got Talent. And I said to her, like, no, you don't want that path. You want a very, very different path. You want to like figure out what you want to say and what kind of artist you want to be, which I think Lord has done, don't you?
Yes, I do. And I think that's why she waited 5 years. That's why the records don't come one after another. It's a brilliant move on her part to disappear from the consciousness, to let the heat settle so that the art can get heard instead of the Star Maker machinery pushing a Lord narrative. Like, and it's probably cost her some money, and it's probably cost her some, influence, but I just think it's the path to take myself. But
no one is arguing against you, Jeff. Not on this podcast.
Timmy, give us your song, man. What's your
song?
Yeah,
let me hear it.
Team.
Pure Heroine by Lord.
Wait till you're announced. We've not yet lost all our graces. The hounds will stay in chains. Look upon your greatness and she'll send the call out, 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 send. Tell. We live in cities you'll never see on screen. Not very pretty, but we sure know how to run things. Living in ruins of a palace within my dreams. And you know, we're on each other's team.
I'm kind of over getting told to put my hands up in the air. I mean, I feel ya. Like, the amount of DJs at clubs saying, yeah, no, I'm over it. Let me dance how I want to dance. You know? It's like square dancing. I don't want to be commanded all over the floor.
Enforced recreation.
All right, gentlemen.
So wait, good. Tim, at this age, she's like 19 when this comes out? How old is she?
No, she's younger than that, right?
Younger
isn't
than
she
that.
Like 16 when this record comes out?
This 2013.
So one of the things that's great about this record, and you can really hear it in that song, is there's the beginning part, and then it comes in. It's the record sounds like she wrote the songs with a Casio keyboard and a drum machine singing a cappella. And the reason why it sounds that way is because that's what she did. Like, she just sat in her room and wrote these songs and polished them and worked on them. And the production is really tremendous, in my opinion, in the way that it lets the songs breathe. It expresses who she is and what she has to do, but does shine it up enough where you can at least, it doesn't sound like a 16-year-old New Zealand kid in her bedroom. You know what I mean?
Right.
But the bones of the songs are all that. And that's why it's so unusual. Like, it's because she created it herself. And also, she's not. She's working within a canon, but she's not imitative. You know what I mean? Like, she's not trying to sound like somebody else. Like, and also I love that one, the team one, the Love Club is about growing up. She's got all of these songs about what it's like to be a teenager that are just so beautifully expressed that just capture it perfectly.
Yeah, and don't capture it without resonating to people who are no longer teenagers. I mean, like, right, what Tim's really articulating is, like, this is a teenager writing to teenagers with such a pithy, on-the-nose language and sound for it that those of us who are way past that moment are brought back to it.
Mm. Oh, totally.
And that's really, that's great. Like, that's impressive.
Right, like, she's the kind of teenager I wished I could have been. Like, I'm doing my own thing. I've got my own groove. And it took me till my 20s to get there.
But she expresses the heartbreak.
I'm not sure I ever got there to this level, you know?
All right, I have good news and bad news for you all. According to my math calculations, we need to crank out 8 podcasts in the next 4 weeks. Hello?
The number you have dialed is not in service.
So we'll figure it out via text, but we need to wrap up season 2 before I go away to Utah.
Okay.
With all the time that we have in our lives. Ben, when are you coming back stateside?
I will be back June 2nd. Because June 3rd, I was originally flying back. Dolly and George are flying back June 4th, and I was going to fly back with them. And I had to move my flight because June 3rd is Scott Schimmel, longtime listener, Scott Schimmel's 50th birthday party.
Oh, I can't miss that.
He rented out the Mill and Mine, a club that seats, or it's a standing club that fits 800 people. He's got 500 people coming to his birthday party. So it's going to be pretty sweet.
Can I go?
Shit, come on down, Tim.
I mean, if he's a fan.
Yeah, no, for maybe sure. Maybe he'd you like to meet come. Yeah, totally.
Can we spend a
and listen,
minutes?
Hey, Timmy, there's a free bar for an hour. You got to get in there. I'll tell you exactly when it is.
Let's go.
That's amazing. And Tim, Timmy and I are headed towards a potential NBA Finals showdown.
Not after last night. Woo!
Your Celtics are weird. That is a weird, weird team.
That was miserable to watch, let me tell you. Oh, man.
Anyway, I know it's a music podcast, but the Celtics-Warriors potential
it's real. It's
finals
there.
And the subsequent impact on the podcast might be felt.
Indeed.
Maybe not
I
heard,
think it's
but
likely.
Definitely felt.
As a neutral third party, I would say that's the likely matchup at this point.
Well, hang on till season 37 of the podcast when the Knicks –
how dare you? How dare you?
All right, gentlemen, talk to you later, Ben. Be safe. Yeah,
have
fun.
A fabulous trip.
Yep. Yeah. Adios, fellas.
Talk to you later. Bye.
Hey there, fabulous souls. I'm Stephanie Baklaan.
And I'm Eden Alpert.
And we're the hosts of the brand new podcast, Unapologetically Fab.
Get ready to join us on an amazing and real journey as we dive into life after 40 and own it.
We're all about changing the narrative, leaning into who you are, and living a life by your own design.
Join us as we embrace life unapologetically and redefine success.
This is Unapologetically Fab,
an Electric Cast production.
See you there.
Electric Cast. Welcome to Ringside with Ray and Prince. My name is Ray Leonard Jr.
My name is Prince Daniels Jr.
On this show, we come to humanize
athletes, entertainers, business executives. We're going to see what makes them tick.
Tuesdays, 10 a.m. Pacific time on Spotify, Apple, Amazon, and wherever you get your podcasts.
We'll see you there. Peace and power.
Electric Acid. Electric Acid.